And to learn more, visit massbreads.com.
Would you believe that champions weren't measured by rings, but by a crown? That the history books were written on dirt? That the greatest of all time was a horse?
He is moving like a tremendous machine.
Experience the magic at this year's Belmont Stakes as we honor the 50th anniversary of Secretariat's legendary Triple Crown Triumph. Join the celebration at Belmont Park on Saturday, June 10th. Tickets on sale now at BelmontStakes.com.
Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. We're back at Pimlico, and, you know, it come up to this press box every year on the Monday, and most often the first person I would see would be Marty McGee, who is obviously absent and is probably getting ready for a draw at Churchill's. He's probably been on the backstretch since what, 5:45, you think, Dave?
Six fifteen.
There you go. He's going shed row to shed row.
Hey, I don't know if you know. You said you were preoccupied by your drive up here yesterday. He did get his first victory yesterday with Joe Talamo.
I missed that.
Yes, yeah, I think it was a $38. And my favorite. I love Churchill. I love Kentucky now. $38.46 might have been the
mutual
winning mutual.
So wow!
Congratulations to our good friend Marty McGee and Joe Talamo for getting their first win together.
Rich Migliori is joining us as well. And Mig, you know, if you're going to make that big comeback, Marty McGee will take your book.
Yeah, no, there's no big comeback. This body's too old.
That was Marty. I'll take his book.
And I started limping around. So, six. He gets here at six. Was it banker's hours? That ain't an agent's, schedule. Come on, Marty, let's go. Yeah. Early bird gets the worm.
Yeah, we didn't say AM or PM, by the way.
Well, I thought I'd take the opportunity. Dave is going to bring us up to date on the field news, and then we'll talk a little Belmont the weekend and some, obviously the Man of War and the Vagrancy, the Peter Pan, and we got plenty to talk about with the two of you. But Dave, first and foremost, it looks like this field is set.
It looks like it's going to be an eight-horse field. Disarm, fourth in the Kentucky Derby, was not entered for the Preakness by Steve Asmussen. The fact that he had run in the Lexington 3 weeks before the Derby, then come back again, I think was the major factor in that decision. He doesn't want to blow the summer with the horse, and he's eyeing the Jim Dandy Travers route with a horse who's, was always a little bit behind anyway, so maybe a little, his performance I thought was pretty solid in the Kentucky Derby and probably gives him a good springboard to, for the summer and be a factor in the division. So with him out, and then we lost confidence game over the weekend with, they're not happy, as Keith DeSormo said, he wasn't happy with the way the horse is training. We're down to, I think, eight with only one horse from the Kentucky Derby being the winner, Mage. And in my perusal of the charts, I couldn't find the last time just one horse came out of the Kentucky Derby to go in the Preakness. And I think this format of 2 weeks between the Derby and the Preakness and 3 weeks between the Preakness and the Belmont has been in place in 69. And so that's sort of the baseline I'm using for that statistic. But I did go back even further, and I still couldn't find anybody, any Preakness that just had one Derby runner in it. So, yeah, it'll spark debate. It'll spark social media conversation on, should they, change the Triple Crown format, which is something I actually have been in favor of for many years, to be honest with you. I don't believe, the argument to keep it is, well, there'll be more Triple Crown winners. Well, not necessarily. I think it'll be actually harder to win because the best horses will face each other more often if it's a little bit better spaced, more spaced out. So, but that's what we're looking at, 8-horse field. By the way, the one jockey assignment that I've been, I think I got finalized on Chase the Chaos is going to be local Sheldon Russell is going to
ride. Oh, nice.
Oh, good for him.
So I think you have three, no, I'm sorry, two local jockeys, three. Fergal Lynch, Sheldon Russell, and I think Jaime Rodriguez is on the, we did bring in coffee with Chris over the weekend.
So Rodriguez, he did get, Rodriguez is going to ride.
That's what I was told, yes.
That's nice. Good for him. And he gets along well with that horse.
You know what's funny is going into the Kentucky Derby, aside from the horses who had never, aside from the jockeys who had never raced in the Derby, well, that's not true either. Castellano was one of the few who hadn't gotten a Derby win. Coming into the Preakness, he's the only jockey who has a Preakness win. He's got two of them.
That is funny, actually. And of course, when you talk about his Derby wins, I mean,
Preakness wins.
You got
Bernardini the day that Barbro unfortunately got hurt, and then the Cloud Computing.
Cloud Computing.
It's weird. Chad Brown going for his third Preakness. It'll be his third different jock. He's got Irad on. Irad Ortiz on Blazing Sevens. He won it with Castellano, and he won it with Jose Ortiz last year.
And to round these out, obviously, what I was going to angle toward, by the way, is the Bernardini association with this race is obviously first mission. The parallels are prominent.
Yeah, it'll be his fourth start. The first mission's fourth start. Godolphin, which was Darley then. You know, went for the racing aspect of it. Yeah, no question about it. Good call.
So let's run down. Let's get the jock assignments firmed. Mage, obviously, Castellano. National Treasure, Johnny.
Johnny V.
Right.
0-for-12 in the Preakness, by the way. Kind of
interesting.
Kind of an odd stat there.
How about that? Wow.
Well, you think about it, though. Todd, you know, if they don't win the Derby, he doesn't run back in the Preakness. And that was, you know, for years, Johnny's main guy until recently. More recently, Baffert's been, you know, Johnny's pipeline to the Triple Crown.
Wow.
The interesting thing there is, so Gustavo Legato's, one of his other Preakness runners, maybe his only other Preakness runner, was, in fact, it was his only other Preakness
Bodie
runner,
Express.
Bodie Express, dropped Johnny coming out of the gate. So even though that counts on Johnny's record, it probably should. He's probably really 0-for-11.
Wow.
You know, in horses that actually made it past the finish line the first time.
Unbelievable. First mission,
Luis Saez.
Yep.
Blazing Sevens, Arad Ortiz.
Red Route, Rosario.
Rosario. 4 seconds in the Preakness, by the way, for Rosario. Chase the Chaos, Russell. Perform, Fergal Lynch. And Coffee with Chris, Jaime Rodriguez.
Well, and of course, you had broken the Perform news last week, and then I had had the night you did it the night before. Then I had Shug. I had not seen the news, and so when Shug mentioned it, and I said, "said Shug, when was your last Preakness start?" He said, "I think it was Easy Goer."
That's actually Orb.
But
that was a forgettable one in Orb. He didn't really do much running, so that was easily forgettable. He's actually run three horses in the Preakness. Two of them were 3-to-5, and one was 53-to-1. Pine Circle in 1984.
Oh, for Lob Lolly.
It was 53-to-1. He said, well, we might not have run any good there, but we came back. I talked to him yesterday at Belmont, and he said, we ran well here. He was second in that year's Belmont Stakes.
There you go.
Well, I don't think Perform will be either 3-to-5 or 53-to-1, but he'll be one of the longer prices. Although he had a decent enough work yesterday. I mean, I think this horse is sneaking. You know, look, it's an 8-horse field. I don't know where you're going to find the air quotes value in the race, but he could very easily find his way into the number.
Where are we going to find pace in this race is the question.
That's a great question, and I haven't found it yet. I don't know, this first mission, you know, he's been forward, you know, forwardly placed, third, second, third, going a mile and a 16th twice. Does he now, you know, maybe get out there? I'm not sure. I know the local horse, Coffee with Chris, has been forward, but, you know, not necessarily in a fast enough manner. Perform did show, you know, well, that was sprinting. It'll be interesting to see how it shapes up. That's sort of why I was liking Confidence Game until he got hurt, because I thought he could go back to some of those other races. You know, he was chasing that pace in the Derby, which was hot, and stuck around until about the 3/16 pole. I really didn't like him going into the Derby off a 10-week layoff, But I was sort of thinking the 2-week turnaround, like he could have done a Hansel. I believe Hansel was 10th in the Derby and then came back and won the Preakness.
Well, speaking of seconds in the Preakness, Rich Migliori.
Yeah.
Magic Wisner, right?
Yeah.
You know what's crazy about it? So I picked up Magic Wisner because I beat him in the Tessio with a horse of Todd's, so smoked him. And, you know, just got an easy lead and they couldn't catch him. And so then I picked up Magic Wisner. And the way he was running, it took him about a half a mile to kind of find his stride, sort himself out. He wasn't the best moving horse. And turning for home, when I got out in the clear, I said, I'm gonna catch this horse right on the post, War Emblem. And Mike Smith went down close to War Emblem. He rode a horse for Lucas. I can't remember his name now. Proud Citizen or something?
Proud Citizen. I like Proud. That was a favorite. That was my Derby horse.
And when he went down close to War Emblem, it made War Emblem dig in a little bit more. And he, you know, kind of did just enough and held us off. And I was always like, damn, I think if Mike had stayed away from him, because I was like, you know, wide enough from him, he'd have never seen me coming. And I might have nailed him right on the money. And then Magic Wisner was the hardest trying. He tried so hard that horse. He was such an overachiever. He was pulled up within a 16th of a mile of the finish line of the Preakness and walked back with his head between his legs. He was exhausted. He gave more of himself than just about any. Him and like Hidden Lake are the two horses that stood out in my career that they just tried and went to the bottom of the well. And then I wound up winning the Ohio Derby on him. And he didn't come back good that day. And I was supposed to go ride him back in the Haskell. And I said to my agent, yeah, I think it was Drew Mollick, I said, you know, that horse didn't come back so good. And one day, and it kind of gives me an odd feeling. And we could ride Iron Deputy in the Jim Dandy the same day. And I didn't go ride him. Luzzy rode him. He finished second to War Emblem again and was retired. That was his last race. He wound up with Lyme's disease, and he had a whole bunch of problems.
Oh, that's right. Yeah,
and then I rode Iron Deputy, and I'm following Medaglia d'Oro, and Bailey tapped him on the shoulder, and he cut out, and I tried to follow him, and I didn't have his acceleration, and I got caught between two horses at the 3/16 pole. They came together, and I got dropped. I said, so I didn't go ride that horse because I don't like the way he felt, and I stayed home and got dropped. You can't run from your destiny.
That's funny. You know, Nancy Alberts trained Magic Wisner, and that was a big price, 45-1. Just looked it up, 45.70 seconds. So the exacta with it's funny. War Emblem was only a 20-cent favorite over Medaglia d'Oro, $2.80 wow. And $3. And Medaglia d'Oro basically chased and faded away. He ended up seventh.
Well, I'm actually curious to see how this wagering is going to go here. I mean, you would think Mage would be the favorite. Probably will be.
Sure.
But you've got
First Mission and National
First
Treasure.
First Mission and National Treasure coming from really high-profile connections, mm-hmm. fresh and fit and dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just interested to see how that all plays out because... you know, Baffert's won this thing seven times. I know National Treasure isn't, you know, his form. You know, he won his first time out and he hasn't won since, but you could make some excuses. He had missed the San Felipe in March with a bruised foot. Wet weather in California might have interrupted his training schedule coming back for the San Diego Derby. Ran a short horse, gets switched back to Baffert after that. After the, you know, he was with Tim Yachtin. You know, Baffert doesn't, you know, he's had. Here he is back on the Triple Trail, first time 2 years. So it'll be interesting to see how that horse gets bet. First Mission, Brad Cox, Luis Saez coming off a win, two wins. Just interested. I'm just kind of interested to see how this is going to play out in the wagering.
That's a great point. That's a great point. And also because there's not going to be the obvious pace setup that that he benefited from, certainly in Derby. But, I mean, I'll tell you, I was there for that maiden breaker. You win at 7/8, Rich, right? You've got tactical speed. You've got you win on the front end at 7/8. That's a horse that, you know, that can make his own luck in that regard.
Yeah, absolutely. And just, you know, what Dave's talking about, that, you know, an obvious amount of pace in the race. And it's always a good thing to be forward at Pimlico. It'll be interesting. I kind of can't wait to start digging into it. You know, Medaglia d'Or ran in the Preakness, and I was working a lot of horses for Bobby Frankel. And I worked him, his first work back after the Preakness, and he was telling me he was going to put him on the grass. And after I worked him, I said, why would you put this horse on the grass? I said, he'll be tough in the Belmont the way he just worked. Nah, he travels like that, and then he doesn't find, and that's how turf horses work. And I said, well, I think you're crazy if you don't try the Belmont with this horse. And then he ran him in the Belmont. He ran second. Then he won the Jim Dandy, the Travers. Frankel was ready to put him on the turf.
They just always try to have the horse do something, you know, prove them that they can't do this. Just you're going good on the dirt, just keep him on the dirt. When he runs a clunker on the dirt, then try him on the turf. I never quite could. We're always trying to prove what a horse can't do as opposed to just going with it and doing what he likes to do.
Dave, how many times I'll see a guy claim the horse, man, that looks like a nice claim. Yeah, he just won for like 20 sprinting on the dirt. Yeah, I'm going to run him long on the turf. What? Like, why? I mean, you know, don't reinvent the wheel.
His fourth dam, his fourth dam threw a turf winner at Belmont in you know, 1991. That's the reasoning.
You bring this up, and I'm not going to tell the story because I'll ruin it. But last Saturday night, a week ago Saturday night, after Derby, went with the Sagans, with Anthony Sagan and his father, and the two Phils. His father is one of the two Phils, and the LaSalas. Jerry LaSala and Nancy, of course, Nancy of the PDJF. And Rich, Jerry LaSala told a story about riding for Steve Asmussen and a surface switch and a distance switch that confounded Jerry. And it's a story that absolutely, I've got to let Jerry LaSala tell the story. And maybe you've heard it. I mean, and Jerry LaSala, he should have his own show.
Yeah, well, I'm going to tell you two things about Jerry LaSala. First of all, great storyteller. A fantastic guy. But he used to come down to Florida in the winter and, you know, didn't ride a lot, you know, stayed close to some of his Chicago outfits. He made more money in the jockey's room playing poker. I think all he wanted to do was have one mount every day so he could get in the room. That guy is as good a poker player as I've ever played. And, you know, then you always have a couple guys in the room that, like, they shouldn't be in the game. And it gets down and, like, you know, cards read, right? Oh, what do I have? Wait, you called all of those raises with that nonsense? And Jerry, he made a living playing poker in Florida in the winter.
Well, he told a story about two straight seasons where he was getting on horses for Asmussen and working horses, working every morning. He's getting on three or four or five. And he keeps asking you, can I ride one in the afternoon? Can I get on one? You know, you got a live one for, and he apparently Steve keeps promising him and the season ends and he never gets on one. And so he's all annoyed. But the next winter, same thing, goes through the exact same thing. And it gets to be like closing weekend. And finally, you know, Asmussen says, I got one for you. And, Jerry looks at the PPs, and it's a horse that's been running long on the dirt, and he's got him moving to the grass in a turf sprint. and you know, Jerry says this son of a bitch, yeah, this piece, and you know he wanted, you know, he wanted to get the friends to, you know, to bet out. Son of a gun. So he gets on the thing and doesn't tell anybody to bet, and nothing. whistles. wins easy. He said the craziest thing. He said Steve had been building stamina on him, but the horse obviously had speed. He just wasn't showing up in the PPs, but. And also apparently had some pedigree for grass with whistles. And
last time I checked, Steve Asmussen's in the Hall of Fame and Jerry LaSalle is not.
Well, he's obviously in the Jocks Room Poker Hall of Fame.
Well,
no, I'm telling you, that guy made a living playing poker down there in the winter. But that's like the story with me, Steve, with Alan Jerkins. I wasn't doing any good. I had lost the bug. I'm running around Hialeah hustling, Chief says, I'll put you on one. He puts me on this filly. I get the racing form that morning, and it's a mile and an eighth on the turf, and she's a sprinter. I mean, she goes 21:44. I'm like, well, now I'm in trouble. This thing's going to run off of me. I'm going to look stupid. Go to the paddock. I figure he'll have some instruction. Good luck. Get me a check. I walked her to the gate. I petting on her. I was doing the best Julie Crone before Julie Crone. And the doors open. She goes to start running off. I'm just quiet. She comes back to me, goes a half and 50. Turn for home. I asked her. She kicks on for 100 yards, bottoms out, can't go that far. I'm relieved. I did my job, right? Come back. I could see he's upset. Chief, what's the matter? I got her to slow down. She was nice and relaxed. He started screaming at me, slow down. Horses have been running away from their enemies for millions of years. I get a jockey wants to change evolution. She has one weapon, her speed, and you took it away from her.
That's Andy Serling's favorite story of yours to tell on the air. He loves that. He quotes that all the time.
Yeah, I mean, it it opened my mind. I was like, oh wait, he wanted her to open up like legs. I didn't know.
And that actually brings up an interesting element. I mean, trainers and instructions, Rich, in the paddock about whether you want specific instructions or whether they just say ride them like you own them.
The best instructions a trainer can give a jockey if they haven't ridden the horse. Hey, this horse might be a little better inside, a little better outside, might have a tendency to ease up when he hits the front, may want to lug in a little or lug out a little. Not detailed, lay here, lay there. I love when guys, when I was riding, they go, all right, listen, I want you to lay fourth, three lengths off the pace. Okay, fourth, three lengths off the pace if they go a half and 50 or they go a half and 45. I mean, it's just the micromanagement sometimes gets in the way. I mean, I talk about it in the mornings now. Every rider that goes to work a horse has to have a headset on, and trainers telling him, you just went an eighth and 13, you went an eighth and 12. How is somebody supposed to develop a clock in their head and keep it tuned if they always got a voice in their, in their ear telling them exactly how fast or slow they're going in the morning? You can't use that in the afternoon, and then you wonder why guys don't you see guys are reluctant or nervous about haven't developed the clock and they haven't had it to keep it tuned because, trainers feel like it's necessary to even manage that part of it. I mean, it gets to a point where why don't you just, we'll get remote control jockeys and the guys can ride from the box seats. I mean,
don't give them any ideas.
Exactly.
Yeah, right. Maybe I should be quiet. Well, my days are over. But Kimmel came with me with a freaking headset late in my career. I took my helmet off. I went to hand it to him. He said, what's this? I said, why don't you work them too? I mean, you got to let guys do their jobs, right?
Very much so. Very much. Well, speaking of the jobs that got done, let's touch base on some of the results from Belmont this weekend and the action starting to heat up. Start with the grade one, actually, because it was nice and refreshing to see Charlie Appleby not win a race.
That to me was one of the more ridiculous favorites. Price, what you have the chart there?
3-5.
I mean, based on what? Just Charlie Appleby, Frankie Dettori? Because look, it wasn't a stellar field. You had 9-year-olds, you had 8-year-olds, and whatnot, who you thought were past their prime. Obviously, Red Knight isn't because he's still running terrific. But my lord, 3-5. I was like, what on this horse's form shows that he should be in favored? Yeah. maybe 6-5, 7-5, 3-5. I was just floored by that. And but look, Red Knight and Channel Maker are two very, very cool horses. And you know, I kind of poke the bear a little bit sometimes when a 9-year-old runs really well, because, and I'll say, if I have room at the end of a tweet, or say, well, this horse won't be able to run here next year, because I do not understand. I don't,
it's bizarre,
like the rule, yeah, but 10-year-olds can't run. The 10-year-old should be treated this every which way, you know, just the same as a 4-year-old, 3-year-old, 2-year-old. Just look at the horse, examine the horse like you would anybody else. If the horse doesn't pass your test, then don't let him run. If he does, then let him run. But
they need to revisit that rule and change it. That's silly. You know, and if anything, it hurts some horses too, because now they get late in their 9-year-old season, and now they become, you know, a liability to people. So they're going to look to dispose them because they can't race here, and they'll go to another jurisdiction. And then, you know, that's when horses, I think, fall through the cracks. And if you've got a horse in good form, why shouldn't he compete at 10? Years ago, Dave, you remember this, 5-year-old maidens were not allowed to run in New York. I saw a 6-year-old maiden run recently, but a 10-year-old in good form can't run. I mean, come on, right, guys, you got to use a little common sense here.
1,000% agree. But Red Knight's been a book of Tommy Reclamation Project here. The horse, he told a story after the race where, you know, and it was like the fall after his last race in July of 21. You know, he wasn't doing that great. When he said he looked like he was played out, they sent him to the farm for 90 days. A guy named Chad Stewart, who was a horseman in Ocala. And Chad said, apparently told Tom after the 90 days, it doesn't look like he wants to do this anymore. Tom said, give him another week. After that first week, boy, I just not seeing it. Give him another week. After that second week, you know what? I think he wants to be a racehorse. They got him going again. They went to Mike Maker, who does a phenomenal job with all horses, but you know, he's got seems to have a niche with older male turf horses, or older turf horses in general. And his horse has come back very solid. Won a Colonial Cup at Colonial Downs. He's won a Kentucky Downs. He's won a Gulfstream. Just got beat, I think it was a head or a nose at the Elkhorn by Verstappen for Brendan Walsh, and then comes here and runs a terrific race and gets the job done. So kudos to Mike Maker, kudos to Tom Egan for wanting to, you know, stick it out and giving the horse every chance. And look, kudos to Red Knight. I liked him a bit in the Breeders' Cup. I don't think I picked him on top, but I did like him to be a factor in there, and that's happened to be the only race that he hasn't been a factor since he's come back. But, you know, kudos to them. And, you know, it sounds like he's come out of the race well enough where they'll consider the Manhattan, or maybe they'll consider the Mohawk. You know, he's a New York bred.
Good point. That's a great point. Son of Pierre Prize, Trinity homebred. And, you know, that story reminds me, actually, the way you described that, of what transpired with Miesque's Approval, where it looked like he had soured and wasn't interested and was going to winter anyway. And I want to say that it was Johnny Collins at Live Oak that said to Mrs. Weber, you know, all of a sudden, like in whenever it was in January or at some point over the winter, said, you know, he's running around the paddock and moving like, that's how Mies Approval's run to the Breeders' Cup started. Same way, same exact scenario.
You know, I know this is a little bit different, guys, but a really good, the first New York bred to earn $1 million, or same win, bowed his tendon, and Sally Bailey sent him up. You know, he's retired, sent him up to Tanrac, and he was a gelding in Westchester, and he was there for, you know, 3 years. And get turned out in the snow every day and just, you know, pension, living a life. And they started calling Sally and said, Sally, we can't control this horse. She's going to hurt somebody here on the farm. So she went up to visit. And all that time off and being turned out and everything, his tendon was tight. She brought him back. He won after 3.5 years off.
That's amazing.
Just tremendous.
That is amazing.
I love it. I love that. Well, Red Knight. And 1280 was a nice number.
Well, everybody was going to be a little bit higher than maybe they should have been off the 3-5 Appleby horse.
Yeah. The import that ran as well, Soldier Rising, last seen in the Red Smith last year. This for Christoph, 5-year-old Frankel. And looks like, you know, he's going to be all right.
Well, he needs he needs somebody. Christoph needs a replacement for Gufo, who retired earlier this year. And this horse had been a length off of Gufo, I believe, in the Sword Dancer last year. He mentioned to me that he thought the profile of Aqueduct's turf course last fall might have been more on the speed favoring side, and didn't work for his horse. And this time at Belmont, you know, more room, bigger course. You know, he came with a nice run, a very good starting point for that horse, and, you know, maybe someone would be taken seriously this year in the Manhattan or the Sword Dancer Grand. I don't think we have the Grand Couturier anymore. I'm not sure about that, but
Dave, you noticed with Soldier Rising how, like, he loomed up to the group, and listen, I read Knight was best, and he went on, and he kind of lingers with the group. He kind of hangs there for a little bit, and then he kind of, you know, ran on again. He feels like, to me, like a horse that kind of gets distracted and wants to just run with horses as opposed to running by horses. I wonder if they shouldn't experiment, maybe even blinkers with a horse like that. Because if you watch the race, he stalled. Like, he got to between the 3/16th pole and the 8th pole, he loomed up with momentum, stalled, and then the last 70 yards was running on again.
I could see that, yeah. No, because he doesn't, you know, he's not a big winner. Off when he gets beat, maybe that he had, he had been close in a couple of spots, including the Sword Dancer. We just got beat a length, and it's probably accurate there. It's, maybe try him and blink. You know, try it in the afternoon.
One other little note out of here: the longest shot on the board got beat a length and 3/4. Did somebody think that Mike Lauer would come to New York to run up the track in a grade one? I mean, Mike Lauer is about as savvy as they come. This horse had turf distance form. He's a distance specialist. It was crazy that he was. I mean, not that. And Dave, you touched on it. I mean, all the prices were skewed.
Right, but it wasn't a, you know, that was a good race to take a shot in, no matter who you were with, your Mike Lau or anybody else. I mean, I think our turf male division is a little light this year, which is, you know, again, not knocking them, but actually praising them. But the 9-year-olds, that you have 2 9-year-olds in the race that were factors. I mean, Channelmaker, who's a kind of a cool horse too. I think he was 5th, but he was 6th. But look at the, you know, second head, nose head. I mean, it wasn't. He's probably beaten 3 lengths, if that. It was a good race to take a shot in, and you know. So and kudos to someone taking a shot.
Yeah,
you know,
we need more of that. Yeah,
we do need more of that. So kudos to Michael Lauer, and then he was rewarded with a nice paycheck and a Grade One stakes placing.
Grade One placing, and Strong Tide happens to be a horse.
Yeah,
nice. I don't know if he's, you know, maybe a who knows. I mean, the way. And places, who knows what they could end up doing with him, but he's that. I thought that was a bit of a big number.
Steve, are you sure they didn't have like a reservation at Liberta Den or something?
No,
or?
I don't think so. they don't strike me as They don't. I don't think. You know, we're going to talk to Jenna Antonucci later this morning. Talk about the Peter Pan, and it did feel like if there was an alternate to Bishop's Bay, that Arcangelo was the real thing coming up from Florida, and the way the race was bet. I mean, Andy had a great tweet I saw while I was at the Iroquois. He said it's a they knew kind of day.
Well, on the show with you on Friday, which, by the way, I think this might be the first time in the history of you show having me on back-to-back broadcasts.
Friday, Mondays, so that's a good point.
I said I thought that Bishop's Bay would win, but if you were looking for a little bit of value underneath, you would look at Arcangelo. I didn't know he was going to be bet down to 5-2. In fact, Jenna said to me yesterday, said, "Well, I guess we won't fly under the radar anymore." I said, "I don't think you flew too much under the radar in the Peter Pan. You were 5-2."
Yeah.
So, you know, that horse ran a tremendous race. I know some people who liked that horse in his first two starts and weren't crazy about the trips that he got in either one. And then, you know, broke his maiden March 18th, I think it was, with Javier in the bike. And, you know, came back and validated. The thing is that stood out was they got the horse into New York early, got a really nice workout on the track.
59-3.
And he ran to that work. And, you know, it's an interesting, you know, there's another example, and I'm sure Jenna will explain it all, so I won't. Just the patience from trainer and owner allowed this horse to develop into, you know, now fourth start, graded stakes winner. We'll see where they go from here. But I think, you know, I talked to Ned Toffee yesterday from Spendthrift, just to sort of, for twofold reasons. One was to find out a little bit what they might be doing with this horse, and he went out of his way to say, I think that's a very nice horse that beat him. By the way, the other thing I wanted to talk to him about is following C, who was back in the entries off a year plus layoff on Thursday at Belmont, but you can talk about that later. But he went out of his way to praise that horse and thinks that horse might be, you know, couldn't develop into a serious player. And then I guess they just have to decide now whether they want to run him a mile and a half in the Belmont or wait for some of the other summer races.
I'll tell you the other, and I'll discuss this with Sid on Wednesday as part of Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale, who had another big weekend. The Arrogate situation. Here's a nut. This was a May foal, by the way, which is part of the development arc, and out of a Tappet mare. So there's even more late development at issue. 97 buyer, I think.
97 buyer. They're gonna have a hard time. I mean, Jenna can explain it all to you, but I think they're gonna have, with that pedigree, they're gonna have a hard time skipping the Belmont.
I would. Well, that's why you're running the Peter Pan anyway.
Right, but she's non-committal to it, and I get it. You want to make sure everything's fine. And look, if Mage wins Saturday, she's going to have to find a new rider for the horse, which may not be, you know, what she wants to do either. But given the pedigree, given the way he ran and, you know, finished and galloped out, it's going to be, boy, you're going to have some serious restraint to skip the Belmont.
Well, all these Arrogates that are all, as they mature, getting better and better, and it's just too bad. And this was this is yet another one of the modest purchases that happened before, you know, his progeny started to perform. It's amazing. This same story has been repeated over and over again. And, you know, part of it, that dam rings a bell.
Well, if you go further back in the we said the third dam, you know, the third dam of that horse, you know, when he claims a dirt sprinter went on the grass. But actually, the third dam of this horse produced Rags to Riches, Better Than Honor, and Casino Drive, all horses who participated.
Well, Better Than Honor,
right?
You mean.
Yeah, yes.
Well, the second dam is teaming.
Yeah, so it's a very distance oriented pedigree. Again, another reason why it's going to be extremely difficult, I think, for them to skip June 10th.
Well, that dam, you know, that dam won the Hollywood Starlet, the sister won Streaming, and there was also Treasuring, a sister of hers, that won the Star Shoot, and was placed at two in the Desi Arnaz at Del Mar. So actually, there was some precocity from the female family. This is a cool story. Looking forward to talking to Jenna, who we haven't talked to in ages. Then there were the two sprints guys, and I need your help on these. The Vagrancy, obviously, yesterday and Mott won both of them. Caramel Swirl, because you can't go a weekend without Godolphin winning a graded stake. And then, of course, Candy Man Rocket for Frank Fletcher, bred by Shell Evans, the Candy Ride 5-year-old, wins the run happy, and he had to run his A race, because honestly, and he got bet a little bit too. Coming into this, at least on Figs, he was about fourth best.
Well, his last race was just too bad to be true. Right, I mean, it was last in the Count Fleet Sprint at Oaklawn, where there was a lot of fast horses, and he was chasing those fast horses, and just kind of, said, "No, thank you, I'm not doing it today." He needs a certain type of trip, clear trip, stalking cut type of trip. He got the exact trip he was that they were looking for, and he beat, you know, a solid, you know, a grade three type of field. Is this horse going to develop into, you know, look, Mont's got a pretty nice group of sprinters, Elite Power is a champion, Cody's Wish, who's, you know, yeah, a terrific horse in his own right. So this is a nice horse to have for the other races, and I think he'll, you know, properly placed, this horse will have a good year. Just a quick note on Sunday's race, Caramel Swirl. Bill Mott has a new, I think the Breeders' Cup should come up with a new way to qualify for their starters. You know, they have the win and you're in. They should have the lose at Tampa Bay Downs in your seasonal debut and automatic berth. He rattled off a list of horses. Royal Delta, Cody's Wish, Drosselmeyer, and I know he said there was one more, and I can't remember exactly what it is, who have lost their seasonal debuts at Tampa, and then later that year won the Breeders' Cup race. So, Carlos, after the race yesterday, get that. At Tampa, ran fourth in the Minaret, and then she performed nicely yesterday. And look, she also benefited from a not the greatest trip in the world for Dr. B. I'll just put it, I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah. And then, you know, years ago, P.G. Johnson used to run everything one race at Tampa, and they'd always run bad, and then they'd come up to New York and be primed. Maybe Bill Mott took a page from his book.
Maybe so, but it seems to have worked because, again, another situation. These two horses were coming off races that seemed too bad to be true given what their form prior to those races. And, you know, and look, Bill Mott needs no introduction. I'll tell you one more funny story, and then I got to run about Saturday's race. Talk to I need to find out the backstory here, but I was talking to Tom Egan about Red Knight, and when I asked, when he mentioned that he called Tom or called Mike Maker after the, you know, when he got the green light to put the horse back in training, I said, kind of hard to take a horse away from Bill Mott, isn't it? And Tom Egan gave me a death stare that I need to do a little more investigating into what happened there, but. But anyway, those you know, Mott showed that he can, you know, he and it's funny talking to Bill because he's always, he had to, like, what happens when these horses aren't in the barn anymore? I said, Bill, you said the same thing the day after the Breeders' Cup. You won two Breeders' Cup races, finished second in the Classic and third in the Filly and Mare Turf, and you were lamenting what the future was going to be of your stable. He said, yeah, because all these horses except for Olympiad came back. They all come back for another year of racing. And he said, yeah, but that won't happen again. I said, yeah. I said, you know what, Bill? I said, this is the year you're going to come up with a couple of two-year-olds that are just going to light things up. So we'll see how it goes. Steve, I got to go write.
You got to write something?
Yeah.
All right, go get it done because we got to go to Pioneer.
Absolutely.
For lunch.
There you go.
Although, right. I do have another offer. You know, I got another option for you. Maybe there may be something else to consider.
All right. Well, I'm all about options.
The Essen Room. You want deli or do you want the pit beef?
I'll have to see what I'm feeling for and feeling.
It could be a parlay. It could be
you
a parlay.
You can go to a deli anywhere. Go pit beef.
Yeah, that's true too. But you're going to take a New Yorker and bring him to a Baltimore deli.
Essen. This used to be a tremendous deli town, Atman's, but the Essen Room. All right,
I'll think
you the pit beef. All right,
Richie, talk to you later.
Take care, Dave.
Dave Gredig, everybody, and I hadn't thought about that, Dave, with the Friday Monday double. If you bet that, you cash. If your future wager. Because normally this is a Marty McGee visit, you know, to kick off the Preakness coverage. But we our Marty McGee coverage.
I know. You sound sad.
I got all misty with him last week at when we were closing him out as a correspondent, as a DRF correspondent, but not right. He'll be on again. You know, one race, Rich, that we didn't talk about, and I think there's obviously a future. That 10th race after the stakes were over Saturday, and there was the second time starter, that Spansive, the Caracanti, for Rapoli and Pletcher. She ended up wiring this field, which I guess in retrospect there was that potential. It surprised me, though. What was even more surprising is her going off at over 6-1. And 1460 here got a nice fig too. I just looked up the fig. She upped her fig from her 81 in her debut to an 85, where she also wired down at Gulfstream. And it just felt like she was, you know, one of several in here that could win. And that Jupiter's Moon for Tony Dutrow ran a good second and was making up ground late. Then there were the two Chad horses. Then there was the other Todd horse. This is a race that is going to be productive all summer long.
I agree. I actually really like Tony's filly in there. She ran well. If she won, I would have been really gin. But yeah, I think that a very, very deep kind of race. And listen, that's the best thing about Belmont. And you know, this time of year, the turf racing and seeing these fields come together, and who's going to step up and become stakes horses. And but I think that race will definitely prove out to be very strong.
I managed to get out a little bit on Saturday, as it happens, with that nightcap. Things were over at Nashville, and I like Linda Rice with the seasonal debuter, Boss of All, the street boss for Addition Farm, the horse that Shaz had last summer and hadn't been seen since last June. And I mean, to get 11-1 on that horse was unbelievable, and ended up with a very nice exacta too, because Central Speed, who figured from Terra Nova to be to be a player, George's Vice was the other horse that I thought made a lot of sense, but Boss of All was my key on top, and that was a nice get out.
Well, it's so funny, because like I used to hear people talk about that, like the get out, and I really wasn't paying that much attention, and now it's like my ears prick up, because I'm the one trying to get out some of these afternoons now.
I hear you. Well, Rich, this was fun and impromptu, which happens plenty. I didn't know if we were going to get to you. I hadn't heard right away, and it was perfect timing, because Dave had come over and he had firmed up the eight starters officially for the Preakness,
I'm glad I got to come on. I actually was done early yesterday. I was able to get to my son's in-laws through a nice little barbecue, and we all got to sit around and stare at the baby, and we're all like stupid, but it's great in all the best ways. And I won't see you, but pretty soon you'll be up here for Belmont, and we can grab a hold of Siaka, and we can go to dinner and get our chops busted.
Exactly. And it's funny, when we were talking, I'm glad you said, glad you mentioned Gary, because he's got a good approach. When the jock comes to the, when we were talking before, you made me think of something just now. Gary says to the jock, "What do you think here?" It's always the first thing that Gary says, because he wants to see, if they've, in some cases it's a rider that knows the horse very well, but he wants to see if they, what they have looked at in terms of
if they've done their homework.
Exactly.
If they're showing up prepared. Right?
That's exactly right. And sometimes sometimes they'll say, I really don't know what to expect, but mostly they'll say, looks like there's a little speed, or looks like, might be able to, control it up front. And then Gary will say, yeah, he said he's doing really good. He was sharp in the work, and he might break sharp, etc. So anyway, but I've always liked that, the way Gary, says to them, "What do you think here?" first.
Well, listen, if guys don't show up and, do their homework, it's going to show up. You know when guys haven't prepared. I don't criticize a lot when I do TV.
Yeah.
But I do criticize when it's obvious to me that someone did not prepare. You need to know, as a rider, every single horse's habit and every single rider's habits, and they all have them. And if you see a guy get caught up behind a horse that always stops at a particular spot and always lugs in, and they put themselves in a position to get stuck in that traffic, that's on them. And that's just lack of preparation. And that's when I call guys out. I understand as much as anybody, if not more, how difficult the job it is. But there's so much technology. There's so many tools available to riders now. You just go right to a replay center and pull up any number of replays. You can sit there for hours and watch replays. It's not like years ago. You had to go to the stewards. Maybe, can I watch this horse? Can I watch this race? And it was a whole rigmarole. Now it's all there on your computer, right in front of you, information age. If you're not taking advantage of it, someone else is. And there's a lot of races won by heads, necks, and noses.
Rich Migliori, everybody, and had over the week at the Derby, and actually also at even at Iroquois, at Nashville. A bunch of people say how much they enjoy hearing from you, Rich.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And it sounds like it was a good time down here. I enjoy the steeple chasing. I loved going to Far Hills. I can't wait to get back there this fall.
Excellent. I'm looking forward to it, too. We've missed, actually, 2 years in a row, one because of the new baby, and the Preakness, frankly, might be at under threat. We may have to hightail it. Tina's coming Friday. We may literally, she may arrive at Thurgood Marshall, and we may be heading straight to Rochester, because baby three, grandchild three, is knocking on the door.
Oh, fantastic. Congratulations. I didn't know that. Yeah. That's wonderful.
Thank you. Thank you. Rich McLeod.
I will talk to
Thanks,
you soon.
Buddy.
Take care.
You got it. Yep. There's Mig, everybody. 4450, of course, on your Twitter. Let's take a break. We're going to come back. Actually, we're going to get Jenna Antonucci next instead of at 11:30. All right? So it's been kind of a scheduled tap dance today. Jenna Antonucci joins us next to talk about her Peter Pan winner and maybe her Belmont starter. This is a nice horse. A really nice horse. Back after this, we're live at Pimlico. But boy, we're thinking Belmont too? All right. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio. Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions, and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and curly stands, the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to know a secret? The Massachusetts Breeding Program pays huge bonuses for finishing first, second, or third at any racetrack in the country. You didn't know that, did you? Massbreds get paid up to an additional 25% of their purse earnings for the owner, and breeder, and stallion owner, and developer. It's the best-kept secret in racing, till now. Tell all your friends, and to learn more, visit massbreds.com.
Would you believe that champions weren't measured by rings, but by a crown? That the history books were written on dirt? That the greatest...